From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Financial clout, earning power, is shifting in the American family. Nearly 40% of working wives now make more than their husbands, and that number is going up, we're told. Reporter Liza Mundy is ready to call women the richer sex. It's a new normal, she says, that will change everything in love and marriage, the economy, equality. Some of the change comes from long-term social trends and women's advancement. Some is tied up with recession and men's setbacks. Where does it all go? This hour on Point, women as lead breadwinners and what that means. Joining me now from New York City is Liza Mundy, staff writer for The Washington Post, fellow at the New America Foundation. Her new book is The Richer Sex, How the New Majority of Female Breadwinners is Transforming Sex, Love, and Family. Liza Mundy, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. It's great to be here.
Let's hear the case you're making and you're not making. I mean, some people may have this right in their own household. Others will look around and say, hey, wait a minute, I thought women made 81 cents for every dollar men made. What do you mean, richer sex?
Well, that's interesting. It's true that there still is a gender wage gap. Just as you say, women make 81 cents on the dollar that men make. Which is why it's even more remarkable that the percentage of wives out-earning their husbands has been rising steadily since the late 1980s when the government started tracking it. In the late 1980s, about 23% of working wives out-earned their husbands. Now it's close to 40%. And if the pace continues, if the rise continues at the same pace that it's been, we could expect that by 2030, a majority of working wives would out-earn their husbands.
What's driving this ratio where now almost 40% of working wives make more than their husbands? Is that because they're getting paid more, they're getting promoted more often, their husbands are getting laid off more often? What's in that number, that ratio?
All those things. There are a number of trends, some of them positive, some of them not so positive. Women, although there still is a gender wage gap, it is narrowing and it has been narrowing for the past 20 or 30 years and hopefully will continue to narrow. There is a generation of young women, as you said in your introduction, who are out-earning young men in most American cities. And that's a result of the other trend, which is that women have been outpacing men in terms of college degrees and also graduate degrees for a number of years now. And those gains are starting to show up economically. So those are the positive trends, is that, you know, many of the barriers to women in terms of education and the workplace have gone away. Not all of them, but many. And then the other issue that you mentioned is that our economy is changing. And we really saw that illuminated by the recession, where 3/4 of the people who lost jobs were men, illuminating long-term changes in our workplace, in which some of the high-paying manufacturing jobs that were available to men with a high school education are going away. Economists talk about a hollowing out of the economy, where jobs are going to move to the low end and the high end of the sectors. And women, it's been shown, have moved out of middle sector jobs into high sector jobs. Men have sort of moved both ways.
Well, some women, I suppose, have moved into high sector jobs. I mean, a lot of people have just scrambled, men and women, for whatever job they could find in this economy in the last few years.
Of course. No, you're exactly right about that. But through their education, women have positioned themselves, I think, to be better served by the so-called knowledge economy that we're moving into. The expansion of sectors like healthcare and education, those traditionally are women's fields.
Break it down for us, if you can, by sort of family income tiers. I mean, does this play out in the same way, whether you're low income, middle income, high income? Are there different trends or amplitudes depending where you fall in that spectrum?
Well, the government statistics don't really break it down by sort of socioeconomic status. But we do know that for women, female breadwinning used to be a function of poverty. It used to be that the women who out-earned their husbands were women whose husbands, you know, were sick or unstable or couldn't find a job. So the wife was the one who was supporting the household, probably on a pretty low wage job.
Okay.
But increasingly that's still true. But increasingly breadwinning is spreading to middle class and higher earning households. The highest gains in the number of female breadwinners have been in the more upper income households. So it's become in my book, I traveled all over the country and interviewed women in religious communities, Hispanic communities in South Texas. I interviewed a family of breadwinners in Michigan, where of six siblings who grew up in a male breadwinner household, five of the six are now in female headed households. I talked to women in big cities. So it really is becoming a widespread phenomenon now.
You know,
and it's also in other countries as well.
Well, look at that. It's so at odds with the way things were in this country. I mean, never mind earnings. Just for so long in history, women didn't even work outside the home. I mean, if you're right, this is a revolution.
It is. It's a big change. And what was so interesting reporting the book, I didn't realize what a big change it was. Looking back historically, you know, there were hundreds of years where women were so disempowered economically that they could not own property or even own the right to their own wages in marriage. I mean, when a woman got married, her property and her identity were subsumed into that of her husband. And back in the 19th century, when they were talking about giving property rights to women, the London Times was very worried about this. And they said that it would change marriage as society knew it, which at the time consisted of authority on one side and subordination on the other. And they worried that once a woman had income, they said, what is to prevent her from going where she wants and doing what she pleases?
Heaven forfend. You know, here you are, you're leaning into these numbers. I mean, you're just kind of aggressively calling it the richer sex, though. I mean, by the numbers you cite, it's still it's still most households that the man's income is higher. But you see a trend line that's very strong here, very pronounced. Do you, as you have been around the country, Liza, talking with people about this, do you feel a general awareness of the trend that you're describing, or are you kind of whacking people upside the head with it, saying, look what's happening here? Or do people know it? Do they feel it, see it around them?
Whacking people upside the head. When I talked to experts, they were really surprised by that 40% statistic. And what's striking is that when I talk about the book, inevitably, wherever I am, women will say, and this is in my own neighborhood, okay, this is in TV studios in New York, they'll say, oh, that's me. That's the life that I'm living. But they think that they're in the minority. And I think part of this has to do with the fact that, just sort of men aside, women often don't talk about this because they're a little bit afraid of stigmatizing their husbands. And I know this. I put out a query through an executive networking group in Michigan asking if any of their executives would talk about out-earning their husbands. And the one woman who came forward to talk about it said, you know, all the other women at my table didn't want to because they were just a little bit worried about, you know, about how their husbands would feel about it.
What about husbands? What have you seen? Are they hey, this is great, you know, bring it on, we need the income? Are they threatened and defensive?
All of the above. Although I would argue that ultimately the outcome is going to be good, and that men are clearly realizing the value of a high earning successful spouse. I mean, studies show that that men in the past 40 years, when they've been asked sort of what the most important traits are in a potential marital partner, the value they place on domestic skills has plummeted, and the value that they place on financial prospects has risen dramatically. So men certainly understand that earnings in a woman help the household, and I think enable men to have a life that is much more flexible and a future with more options. I mean, it's no longer necessary to take a job that's unsatisfying or even a job that you dislike simply in order to support your family. I argue in the book, I mean, we know that fathers today want and spend more time with their children. And we also know that working fathers experience more work-life conflict than working mothers. And so I do think that men are getting the message that having a working wife is a good thing if that's what she wants, and that women's earnings are a plus for households. Now, that said, there's definitely a whole chapter in my book exploring the reasons why men can feel threatened by this situation and the consequences for relationships.
And there's also, I mean, you describe a downside here where this is not all about high-earning, successful spouses. In many cases, this is men who have lost their job, women who are now the major breadwinner, but the whole family's making less than they made before.
Oh, that's certainly right. And I spent a lot of time in Michigan, among other things, interviewing women whose husbands, just as you say, had lost jobs in the recession. And the women were all now the primary earner in their households. A number of them had been stay-at-home moms and had really enjoyed that life. And you know, I felt like the women were being stoic and cheerful about it. And but one woman who had been a stay-at-home mom said when her husband was laid off, she said, you know, he had my life and I wanted it back.
He had my – oh, I see, because he's now – he's not like the working one.
He was the
one.
Stay-at-home
he's
dad. The one who was getting to stay home, and she missed it.
And, it makes it a little hard to celebrate if this is about, you know, men who want to work just don't have jobs, and women who have managed to hang on to their jobs or find one become the breadwinner, but there's just not as much bread.
Oh, that's exactly right. And also, I mean, where the story I think is least celebratory would be in the working class and among poorer Americans, where men have really suffered. We know that 40% of children now are born to unmarried mothers, and 50% of children born to mothers under 30 are born to unmarried mothers. And this is in large part because women, you know, faced with men who have declining economic prospects, are in many cases just making the decision not to get married. I mean, the London Times was right. It has changed marriage as society knows it. And, you know, it's one thing, just as you say, when the woman is economically empowered, but it's another thing when the men just have poor economic prospects and the women don't want to take on another dependent.
Interesting lives of people responding here online. Harry says, we were equal, but now after my layoff, my wife makes more than I do. She makes the house payment, whereas I used to make the full payment myself. Wes writes, my wife out-earns me 2-to-1. As I'm self-employed, she has a PhD, so her education warrants the difference. Wes writes, as a stay-at-home dad, I enjoy watching our 2 children, age 2 and 5, but they still prefer mom, which makes her very in demand as a member of our family, no doubt. And Christine says, we'll get to this, but Christine writes, I'm the breadwinner, and my boyfriend certainly doesn't complain about the extra money, but he does put up a big ruckus about having to do the laundry or clean the house. He has more free time, so it's only fair he does more household chores. What about that one, Liza? I know you've looked at that. I mean, here you go. The men used to say this. I make the money, so please, you know, please, my love, do the chores. That was, you know, now you got a turnaround.
Wow, that was the whole gamut that you just read. I mean, it was the breadwinning household where the man had lost his job, mm-hmm. where the woman had higher education. But that last one is so interesting because I think there needs to be really a new conversation, a new feminist conversation about these issues. It's exactly right that, you know, for the past 20 or 30 years, we've argued that just because a man is working all day and bringing in the income, it doesn't buy him out of helping out around the house. And men need to change diapers mm-hmm. and they need right. to be involved with the children, and they've gotten that message. And now women, at the end of a long, hard work day, they're coming home and they're saying, can't I just sit down for a while? I mean, don't my earnings entitle me to some relaxation? I mean, women really don't know. And sometimes they'll still put in more housework, but they're really having to ask themselves, gosh, I mean, do I have to contribute 50-50 to the household?
When I'm bringing home the bank now.
Mm-hmm. And studies do show that when women are the primary earners, they exert more influence over household financial decisions and purchases than breadwinning men traditionally have.
What, men were just a little more, oh, here's the money, you will do what we do with it? Women are more...
That's exactly right. Men were a little bit more willing to just hand it over and really envision themselves as providers. And I think women in many cases haven't gotten their heads around the idea that they are the providers and that this is the household money. And so they're not exactly handing over the pay packet the way that men used to.
We've got some adjusting to do here. Liza Mundy's book is The Richer Sex. Let's go to our listeners. West Palm Beach, Florida. Elizabeth is calling. Hi, Elizabeth. You're on the air. What's your story?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You could be describing me and my household, by the way.
Okay.
I was the higher breadwinner in our family before the economic downturn. Mm-hmm. Following the economic downturn, I lost my job and then my husband, but I was able to continue to work from home. And even though he is reemployed, some months even taking care of our young children, I still make more. I think that a big part of it maybe might be that more women that I know in their late 30s and even 20s are putting off having children in order to focus on their careers, giving them an edge that our parents definitely did not have.
Because your mother or grandmother would have had young children that were her primary responsibility, and just having them, period, meant that there was...
Correct. In their 20s, during a time when, honestly, that's some of the best times to focus on a career and make gains and achieve those upper-level positions like I was fortunate enough to do.
Elizabeth, we'll look at that aspect, but let me ask you, while we've got you there in West Palm Beach, how has it gone over time? It sounds like some time where you've been the major breadwinner, and then it sounds like you may have bounced back a little more quickly after layoffs in the house. How is that socially? How is it, you know, with your friends, the rest of your family? Does everybody think that's fine, that's cool, or are you low-key about it?
I try to stay pretty low-key about it. Most people think, actually, that I'm extremely lucky because it was right as I was having my children that I was laid off. So they think it's really fortunate that I'm able to stay home and take care of the kids. And I do honestly stay pretty low-key about the fact that I handle a good majority of the bills while supposedly part-time working, and that, you know, I allow people to kind of see that I'm more of a stay-at-home mom who works, and my husband is the main breadwinner. And that's just because I think it gives him a personal sense of satisfaction throughout those years where I was the main breadwinner, and he probably felt badly that he couldn't contribute more. We both have the same level of degrees and education.
Yep.
It's just the field he went into does not have the same capabilities of achieving larger incomes as mine.
Elizabeth, I really appreciate your story. There's a lot in there, and let us look at it. Thank you so much for that. Liza Mundy, I mean, there's many angles we can look at right there, but what do you hear in Elizabeth's story?
Well, it's really interesting. What I hear a little bit is stigma, and I was struck in doing my interviews, the number of couples where the woman was a breadwinner, and it worked out beautifully for the couple. You know, the husband was able to spend more time with the children. It was all fine. But they felt a little bit stigmatized either by sort of society as a whole or in some cases by in-laws. Husbands that I talked to who were very supportive of their wives said that they felt as though their wives' parents, their in-laws, didn't think that they were contributing the way that they...
Hey, big boy, why don't you step up and out-earn our daughter?
Mm-hmm. Right. And women... traditionally, you know, have been led to believe that part of their status and success derives from who they married and the status of the man that they married, specifically his professional status. And I interviewed a young woman software consultant who was dating a guy who worked a manager at Waffle House. And they had a great relationship, but she felt a little stigmatized when she talked about it. Because traditionally, right, you're supposed to marry the doctor or the lawyer, and that's what everybody sort of approves of. So couples have a hard time figuring out how to talk about it and present themselves sometimes.
What about Elizabeth's sensitivity there, her little bit of special handling of her husband's feelings about this and in the way that she presents it to the world and the way that they share work at home? And you could hear her sort of tiptoeing a little bit around his maybe ego, pride.
Right. I mean, women do worry about their husband's ego, and they do, I think, find ways to, I mean, in successful cases, women find ways to really show their appreciation for all the things that their husbands are doing for them and the work they're doing at home. And I think that's a good thing. I talked to the family in Michigan, and one of the wives said of her husband, you know, he is a provider. And she has expanded her definition of provision to include not only bringing in the income, but running the household and coaching the kids and taking them to sports events and lessons. And so that was the way that she genuinely saw it. So I think sometimes you're protecting the other person's ego, and sometimes you're genuinely appreciating what different members of the partnership are contributing.
And let me ask you about this. The first point that Elizabeth raises here about women having children later and therefore having more time to build up those first steps of the career that can let them go on up. We had a conversation a couple of weeks ago about Rush Limbaugh and Sandra Fluck and all that, and there was it was pointed out that the pill had made a big difference in many ways. And we had some listeners, one listener in particular in Michigan, was really upset, so, you know, thinking we were suggesting that something about sex itself was the issue. But here again, you've got contraception, presumably, as very important to the freedom women have found to actually build careers. Sounds like Elizabeth and her husband eventually had kids, but she had that window where she worked hard and successfully on a career.
You're exactly right. Economists have convincingly showed that one of the reasons women did begin attending college and graduate school and investing in themselves and their futures was because of the pill, and because they knew that, I mean, it's all about incentives, right, and economic incentives. And they knew that if they could plan their families more reliably, then their careers wouldn't necessarily be interrupted unexpectedly. And it suddenly made sense to go to college and to get a graduate degree. And there is an economist who has shown that probably 25% of the narrowing of the wage gap between men and women is due to better contraception for women. And just as you say, marriage rates for Americans in their 20s have plummeted. They're much lower than they used to be. People are waiting. Women are accruing this earning power that will, you know, tide them over into the future. And what you also hear from the woman who just called in is that telecommuting and the sort of flexibility that enables people to work at home, I think, is going to enable women to stay in the workforce even after they have children. And even if they're working part-time, to keep their foot in the door. I mean, I worked so-called part-time for a little while, and then I've seen a lot of women ramp it back up when their kids are older and in school most of the time. So there was a lot of what she said, I think, was illuminating and typical of what's going on now.
Now, that 20-something generation that you're talking about right there, that's very important to your projection, your forecast that this is the way things are headed. What, those women who are not married yet or who are not do not have kids yet, they're already out earning men in their age class, I guess you're saying.
That's right. There was a really striking report 2 years ago by a consulting company called Reach Advisors, which found that in most American cities now, single childless women between 22 and 30 now out earn their male peers. And these women are in such an interesting generation. For one thing, they outnumber men in terms of having college degrees. And traditionally, when we marry, I mean, a long time ago, women expected to marry up. And then for a long time, what women expected was to marry laterally, was to match and marry a man who had the same degree set as she did. And we see this all over the place. We see it in the Obamas, for example. And now women are having to ask themselves, well, there's not going to be enough college-educated men to go around. So would I marry a man who didn't go to college? And if so, what would that relationship be like? And women understand now that they could be the primary provider going forward if their boyfriend is a big supporter and willing to invest in them, willing to move for their career. And they're having to get their heads around the idea that this could be a permanent situation. And I talked to one young woman.
Men did that for a long time.
Men did that for a long time. And I talked to one young woman who said, you know, getting boxed in as the primary earner, that sounds to me like a lot more work and a lot less play. So there is a certain, I mean, the potential narrowing of options or the kind of flexibility that that women have enjoyed up until now.
Women, what do you think about it? 800-423-8255 is our number. Men, what do you think? Let's go to Clarksville, Tennessee. David's calling. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Pretty well. What do you know?
Well, I'll tell you. Me and my wife is now the breadwinner, and she wasn't for the first 9 years of our marriage. She has held a full-time job and went to school so we could hit our financial goal. We knew that one day she would get to her education and be able to have this job that she has now.
Mm-hmm.
And we did this so we could put our kids in a better school and move to a nicer house.
And you supported her. You brought home the bacon while she was getting that that training or advanced degree, David.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. And at the same time, we've also had two kids. And, you know, that allowed me to spend a lot more time with the kids. And it was, you know, it was a sacrifice. But it definitely is paying off right now.
So who's the primary breadwinner now? Is it now her, David?
It is now her. It is now her, and it hasn't affected our marriage. I think it helped that we had these goals that we wanted to achieve, and now that we are hitting them, it you know, if anything, it's made our marriage stronger.
Good for you, and congratulations. What about friends, family? Are you quite open about the fact that she brings home the major bucks in your household? Are you low-key about it? Is it just fine?
We're low-key about it, but I think it is. It's apparent to several people. Being that, you know, we've moved and just have acquired things over the past, you know, year or so.
Hey, congratulations that it's working out for your household. I'm glad for that. David in Clarksville. Liza, you know, there's a couple that seems very at ease with it. I mean, this is, again, kind of the reverse pattern of before. He worked to put her through school. Then she gets the major income. They're doing well financially. In his case, he's fine with it.
Yes, that's so interesting. And just as you say, I mean, he did what wives have traditionally done through husbands. It sounds like he worked to put her through school.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
and helped her accrue the earning potential that she's now realizing. And it gave him the opportunity to spend more time with his children, just as he said. And I think another something else I heard there is that they clearly regard themselves as a team.
Mm-hmm.
And for couples who are, you know, who are going through this successfully and being happy about it, that really is an important quality, is to see yourselves as a team. It's something they strategized and planned together. And it sounds like it's a win-win for everybody. And those people who are aware of the situation, I suspect, would envy him his productive and hardworking wife and the material payoff that they've gotten.
They've got the house they wanted. Rick in Worcester, Massachusetts. Rick, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm a 55-year-old scientist by training who's been out of work for 4 years.
Oh.
My wife, who's also a scientist and an administrator at a local university, and for those 4 years, I've been able to get work consulting and doing some teaching, but during those 4 years, my wife has unquestionably brought home more of the bacon. And one thing that we've observed is much of the problems that come up between us, and I want to emphasize our marriage is great, and I'm intensely proud of my wife.
Good.
But one of the biggest sources of problems is not so much the bacon that I don't bring home in terms of money. The problem is the psychological problem of not funding the work that's giving me the rewards that I've done for so many years. And very often when my wife and I struggle, or when she needs to pick me up and carry the load, it's more of a psychological load. Financially, we're fine. To what extent are these psychological costs part of the issue in addition to just the economic, pure monetary costs?
Hey, Rick, stick with us because that is really interesting. I mean, Liza, you know for many years, women who were in the back seat and didn't have the fulfillment of that career that was going somewhere struggled with that. And now here's Rick facing that. What do you say?
Right. I mean, that's what the feminine mystique was all about, was, you know, productive women who felt kind of trapped in a life that they didn't necessarily want. I think, though, I mean, what he's describing, you know, the psychological costs that come with losing the job that you loved or mm-hmm. temporarily, I'm not sure that that's gender-based at this point. I think anybody who has invested a lot of their psyche in their work and really enjoys their work would feel the same way. I don't know that it falls more heavily on men, but it may.
Rick, if I may ask you, Rick, is it hard to take solace from your wife when she's the one who's bringing home the major money, or is she still, is she in a position to help you work this through as a mate?
Well, I mean, again, the money itself is not a source of solace. I think she's a fantastic person for me to talk to about dealing with my, you know, the psychological problems. But it can't fill the gap. For example, we go to a party. Somebody says, "What do you do?"
Yep.
A pregnant pause. And it's not that I'm not bringing home the money. It's that I don't do something.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about American women as the new breadwinners and how shifting earnings are changing gender roles and expectations, changing relationships, changing American life. Liza, we've got all kinds of interesting response here. Julia writes to us, "I've put off having children because I am the breadwinner due to the he recession, and I hate it," she writes. So she's not exactly happy with this. Stephanie writes, "I know three couples where the husband has been unemployed long-term and the wife is the breadwinner, all highly educated and successful. In each instance, the man thinks he does everything now around the house, but the woman still does 90% of everything. Grocery shopping, laundry, cooking, cleaning, you name it. I stayed home with our kids. My husband's the breadwinner. If the tables were turned, I know that I would still be doing everything domestically. But then here's, we'll look at that. But this is an important one here. I hope you'll really help us look at. And this is, comes from Frustrated. Maybe she is in Michigan. Well, let's see. She says, in our household, my husband lost a well-paying job at GM and now works for about one-third of his previous salary. Bummer. I now earn about twice as much as my husband. However, in my company, which has suffered no layoffs, as a woman, I am still underpaid for comparable work. I have a higher degree and twice as much time and experience in the company as my male counterpart. However, he currently makes at least 25% more than me and will soon be my boss if I don't change jobs. She writes, the board of our company is all male, and the number of male executives to female is overwhelmingly male. So basically, there's a glass ceiling at my job, but the pressure to be the breadwinner at home. Now, there's somebody who's taking the breadwinning role, but that is not a happy, liberated situation, Liza.
That is a worst-case scenario, I must say. I mean, and exactly illuminates the problem if the gender wage gap doesn't close and if women continue to be underpaid and if sectors that women have traditionally worked in, like marketing and human resources, are paid less than sectors in the same company, if bosses and management don't see women as family breadwinners, then this is exactly the situation that women are going to be in. And it's interesting. I mean, if you look back at the history of the workforce, there was a time at the beginning and middle part of the 20th century where married fathers were explicitly paid more. They were regarded as breadwinners. They were regarded as the funnel through which the family resources were poured. And there was, you know, an explicit accepted two-tier wage structure because men were seen as breadwinners and that this was their natural function. And clearly the thinking in the workplace has not changed. It's not kept up with the times. And it's very distressing to hear that.
I mean, if you think about the how income inequality has grown in this country, and that's even with men who are traditionally the sort of bi-gender, privileged gender in this society with more leverage, more clout. Now, if it's women under that glass ceiling, you've got inequality, how are they going to break it? Break it for everybody. Sally in Bristol, Connecticut. Sally, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm very skeptical about this trend. I think the only reason we're having this is because of the economy and because so many men lost their jobs. I believe that if and when the economy gets better, this trend is going to change. And men are going to go ahead and make more than women. I am not convinced just because a male and a female who go to college and have the same degree, they graduate and in the same field, the man is going to make more. The man makes more than the woman. So until this changes, I'm not convinced about this trend. I think it's just something that is happening because of bad economy. And then once the economy gets better, it's going to change.
Sally, we hear that skepticism loud and clear. Let me put it to Liza Monday. What do you say, Liza?
Well, that's a really interesting argument. It has been true historically that a college education for a woman did not bring in the same earnings that it did for a man. And that continues to be true. But that gap is narrowing as well. Wage gains for female college graduates have risen faster than they have for male college graduates. This is not just a function of the past couple of years, the recession. The percentage of working wives out-earning their husbands has been steadily going up since 1987 when the government started tracking it. And there was a market acceleration in about 2000, 2001, well before the recession set in, a real jump in the percentage and a continued acceleration through that first decade of this millennium. So it's... I mean, we don't know, of course, how things are going to turn out. And maybe women are going to reject this. Maybe they're going to say, we don't want to be the higher earner. But all we can say now is that the rise has been present for more than two decades now.
Here's a comment from Jade, Liza. Take this one on. She says she can't help but notice the heterosexist nature of this conversation. I work, raise kids, as does my wife. And gay male couples do it, too. I guess this is a couple of two women. Please comment on the male-female politics involved here where same-sex couples struggle with a completely different reality.
I'm so glad that this listener said this. I'd like to say that I do talk about same-sex couples in my book, and I actually offer them as a model of the way forward, because what we know about same-sex couples is earnings can still be an issue, and we saw that in the movie called, you know, the Kids Are All Right. Mm-hmm. We saw that the primary breadwinner in that couple had a tendency to somehow to condescend toward the stay-at-home partner, and that was a bit of a tension. But in general, same-sex couples make decisions about who's going to be the earner and who's going to be the stay-at-home spouse if they have children, or who'll be the secondary, so kind of support system, based on affinity, you know, based on who is best suited for what. And I think that that offers a model for all couples going forward, that we don't have to make decisions based on outdated notions of which gender is best suited for what. And in the family that I talked about, where five of the six are now in female-headed households, mm-hmm. one of those is in a same-sex relationship. And she and her partner have supported each other, and they've made those kinds of decisions. So I'm very glad that that issue was raised.
Marla in Methuen, Massachusetts. Marla, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I fit the category of being the major breadwinner in my relationship. My husband is currently a student, and a few years ago, he worked multiple jobs to put me through graduate school to get a master's degree. And what I've noticed is similar to the email that you had earlier, is actually we're putting off having a family and starting to raise children because, as the major breadwinner, it doesn't feel as stable if I would have children. And so we're just kind of waiting and head on.
Are you worried about that, Marla? I mean, of course, there is a clock. How do you think about it?
Yes, I am worried about it. And I'm nearly 30, and I had wanted to have several kids by the time I hit 30, and that's not an option right now because of the situation that we're in, as I'm putting him through school and in the much higher paying position. And even when he comes out of school on the other end, I will still likely be the higher earner.
Marla, good luck with that. Let me take it to Liza. How are people grappling with that, Liza? I mean, there's still the biological fact of, you know, who gestates the baby.
Yeah, I think we've had two respondents say the same thing, that they're waiting to have children because they are the breadwinner. And that, again, is important to hear and disturbing to hear, because it's women who feel the responsibility of earning and who feel that their earning power will be disrupted if they have children, and who clearly don't feel supported in their workplaces if they become pregnant. And these are concerns that we really need to hear and address, obviously, with workplace policies that make it feasible, that recognize that these women are the breadwinners and make it feasible for them to have children and have families as well. And obviously that's easy for me to say, but it's very important that that message get out. And I think it is important that women talk about this, that they make it clear in their workplace that they are the breadwinner and that they don't hesitate to say that, so that management, to the extent that management cares, understands what the stakes are for families.
I mean, parental leave and child care, all that's been difficult for this country to get its head around really providing. And that's when, again, we had men in the workplace who, by cultural tradition, very often had women at home who, you know, whether they liked it or not, they were handed those jobs. Now with men at home, I mean, listen to this. Here's a Facebook comment from Shava. She says, could your guests address the lack of preparation young men are getting in domestic skills? My less skilled partner, we just separated, was completely unprepared to work independently. He couldn't see dirt. He didn't have an idea of independent scheduling. He needed micromanagement as a house husband, although he went in with this how hard could it be attitude. Shava writes, women need to be careful before taking on the entrepreneurial role if they expect anything but hours of chores waiting them when they arrive home late at night. God help you if you need to negotiate kids in there. It may work, but if it doesn't, you're a single mom with one more kid.
Yes. Well, I'm sorry for this woman's frustration. And it is, I mean, there are plenty of women who say, as I said earlier, you know, I'm just not going to get married because I don't want to take on another dependent. If my partner can't provide and he also can't help around the house, then what's the point of getting married at all? Now, in defense of men, I think it's important to note that men are doing much more housework than they used to. I know women may find that hard to believe, but in fact, men's housework hours have risen over the past three or four decades.
Who says?
any number of sociologists
okay.
and and economists have tracked this, and they have shown that it does coincide with women's entering the workplace, that women's earnings, again, it may not feel this way, but women's earnings have given them more bargaining power in their households, and men are doing more. I'd like to say that I'm doing my part. My son's a very good cook at age 13, and I tell him all the time that women just appreciate this enormously. It's such a no-brainer.
Yeah, well, yes, and as you describe it, it may also mean you've got a high-earning spouse out there who's double happy when she comes home to a nice meal once in a while. Amanda in Wilmington, Massachusetts. Amanda, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a question, or more like a point. My husband and I got married when we were very young, 19, and I did the stereotypical, you know, raise the kids, have the kids, helped in the house, and he went out and made all the money. I'm just curious to see, are there women my age, you know, 36, that are actually coming back and saying, hey, I want my life, I want my career, and starting their career later in life? I'm just curious about that because that's what I'm doing now. I'm going back into farming, and I'm just looking at starting my career.
Well, let's pick it right up here. Sure, Amanda, we'll look at it. Liza, what about Amanda wants to catch the wave at 36. Is she too late to get on this wave you're talking about or not?
You know, I'm not an expert in sort of re-entering the workforce. I did talk to a woman recently who is, and she said, you know, a lot of women start their own businesses because in part they want more flexibility and feel that will give it to them. And women who start businesses tend to do so in midlife. So all I can say is that personally, as I said, I'm old enough now to have seen a number of women who've worked part-time or who have stepped out of the workplace who, as their children get older, are ramping it back up and stepping back in. I wish I had the statistics on how common that is, but I've certainly seen it happen in my own life, anecdotally. One kind of interesting thing also is how female breadwinners kind of manage it when their husbands have been stay at home and then the children graduate and go to college and then what the expectations are for the husband. And I did talk to one wife who said, you know, I couldn't stand having him sitting around doing nothing. I told him he had to get back in the workforce, he had to get a job, or he had to at least go to graduate school. I think women sometimes are a little less tolerant of spouses who, you know, maybe have been stay-at-home dads for 15 years and maybe want to stay that way. And women don't necessarily feel like it's productive. Whereas I think men in general, if their wife has been stay-at-home and wants to continue that, are maybe a little bit more willing to tolerate it.
Interesting. New terrain here. Stephen writes to us on Facebook. He says, my better half is our primary breadwinner. Successful, well-educated. I'm just so proud of her, he writes. I dig looking after the castle, have become an excellent cook, do the garden. Sure, I wish I could contribute more, but good employment is elusive, so we enjoy a good, fair partnership without worrying about the old gender roles that can slow us down. He says, richer sex. He loves it. You know, Liza, you write about what used to be called the deal in sort of male-female, at least, relations here, and how that may be breaking down in this new reality. What was the deal, and is there a new deal around gender relations when earnings change?
Right. The deal was, and the deal, incidentally, is a term that Simone de Beauvoir used. The deal for hundreds, if not thousands of years, was that the man was the provider in some way and that he had the economic authority in the house and that the woman brought beauty, sexual services, domestic skills, any number of traits to the marriage, that each person had to contribute something, and what the man was contributing was provision. And we do see that flipping, and I think in marriages, people do have the sense, I need to bring something to this partnership. And what that the man you just quoted is describing is the sense that, yes, he feels he should be contributing, and so what he is contributing is now housework and emotional support. I mean, one of the interesting things that studies have shown is that women breadwinners, if they have husbands who are just what this man has described himself, you know, they're supportive and they're helping, women value housework, but they even more value emotional support and listening. You know, a husband who will let them unburden themselves at the end of a day and really listen and just be emotionally supportive. And one thing I posit in my book is that domestic space is going to become more and more masculine. I mean, just what he said, kitchens are much more masculine than they used to. And there's
because
a
the
saying
man's
that,
spending time there. So
yeah,
the kitchen,
the kitchen
the man
is a
cave.
New garage. And he's brought all these tools into the kitchen, all these expensive gadgets now that we see. And I think public space in some way is becoming more feminine. We see these huge groups of women out in restaurants dining together. And we see men who are very happy to be making the home their own. They got grills and smokers and, wolf ranges.
What do you think? Is it a done deal, this shift? Or are these waves that will now come and go depending on, I don't know, who's hitting the books harder or what the economy's doing?
Exactly. I think for a lot of couples, the reality is going to be trading back and forth. And that's a great thing. I mean, it's a great thing if a husband can support a wife while she's accruing earning power, and then she'll be the high power partner. And then maybe he'll set up a consultancy or something, or figure out something that he really wants to do, and they can trade back and forth.
Liza Mundy, it's been really interesting. We're glad you've taken out your shovel and dug into this. It's quite a scene to contemplate. We'll see how it turns out, but we really appreciate your being with us today. Thanks a lot.
Oh,
for
it's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Liza Mundy's new book is The Richer Sex: How the New Majority of Female Breadwinners is Transforming Sex, Love, and Family. Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at On Point Radio. Be the first to find out tomorrow's topics and guests by going to our Facebook page, On Point Radio. Hit that like button and you'll get alerts on upcoming shows right there in your news feed. On Point is produced by Julie Jopp, Sam Gale Rosen, Ping Wong, Eileen Amata, Alex Kingsbury, Stefano Katsonis, James Ross, and Dean Russell. With help from Radina Roshan and Lucas Scheppner, our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.